Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. This past year has been extraordinary in so many ways. The pandemic, the recession, and the impending election have created an endless news cycle that at times seems surreal, like something out of a book. For author Lois Lowry, this moment in history is oddly reminiscent of her own work, like The Giver, a young adult dystopian novel which explores a world that prizes conformity above all else. Or Number the Stars, that's a novel set in Nazi-occupied Denmark and tells the story of a Jewish family forced to escape their home due to their political persecution. But while the topic of her books is often dark, Lowry says she believes in happy endings, which is perhaps why she's joining the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee to give a lecture titled Dwelling in Possibility. Before the event this Saturday, Lowry joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about this historical moment and her work.
This last year has been, I think, very interesting, to say the least. As a writer who really deals in, you know, complex themes, especially for a young audience, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this moment that we're living through right now. Do you see parallels between your work and this moment in history?
Oh boy, that's a complex question, and I'm going to give you a lot of credit for dreaming it up. Whether I can come up with a complex answer, I don't know. I will say that you're of course right. This has been a very different, unusual, and difficult year. As a writer, though, as a person who is a writer, I am accustomed to isolation. I'm a very solitary person who spends my time sitting alone in a room, putting words on, used to be a piece of paper, of course, now it's into a computer. So my life has not, in that regard, changed very much. But I write for young people, and I hear from young people, and I have grandchildren, and I'm aware of how their lives have changed and what a loss this has brought to them in terms of their relationship to other people. My life when I was a teenager and my grandchildren's lives, now they're in college, consist of their relationships with friends, romantic relationships at a time, of course, when I was a teenager, that was true and still is today. And now they're so alone and solitary. And so that's been a tremendous adjustment for them. And I think that will affect them for years to come. As I say, my life has not changed that much, except I will say my husband came down with COVID. He went off in an ambulance from our house on April 4th. And I was not able to see him again until he was released from the hospital on June 24th. And I haven't added it up, but that's about 10 weeks. And I could talk to him on the phone, but often he was very difficult to understand because he was so ill and so drugged. So that was a particularly horrible period of time for me. He's now home. And he's recovering, but it's a long, slow recovery with a lot of after effects. So in that regard, that's something that has affected me and will continue to. But as I was saying, it's the young people that I care about. I'm 83, and my husband's 88. He will be next month. So we're not going to be around that much longer. But it's the kids, my grandchildren, that I worry about. What is their future going to be like? And of course, this is a very difficult time politically as well. And I shouldn't take a political stance on public radio. But I will say this, whatever your political views are, this is a very stressful and difficult time. And that's going to have an effect for years to come, long after I'm gone. So I worry about that too. I spend an inordinate amount of time worrying about teenagers. Even though I am no longer one, and my kids are grown, and even my youngest grandchild is now 19. But it's those younger ones, the ones who are 11, 12, and 13, that I worry about in such a formative time of their lives in a world that has just kind of fallen apart in so many ways. I just hope it gets put back together in ways that will be beneficial to these kids.
First, I'd like to say I'm so sorry to hear about your husband, but I'm glad that he's on the road to recovery.
He lost 30 pounds. I wish it had been me that had lost 30 pounds. But yes, he's getting better slowly.
Good. You know, looking at especially that age range that you're talking about, younger teens, one of the big themes of your books, specifically The Giver, is this idea of being the same as one another, which is a really interesting concept to explore right now because our country is so divided in many ways, as you yourself just, you know, alluded to. Has this idea of conformity become more potent in a culture where our differences are so divisive?
Gosh, and that's an unanswerable question. I don't know the answer to it, but I think back to my own years of being in that formative time of 11, 12, 13, when you're trying to figure out who you are and who you're going to be, trying to separate from your parents without being alienated from them, and trying to find your place in the world of your peers. And of course, you're quite right that kids of that age work so hard at being the same as their peers, at the same time that they need to find their own individuality. Whatever the circumstances are in the larger world, I think this is always the thing with kids. But nowadays, of course, they're isolated from their peers. And also something that did not exist in my adolescence, thank goodness, I think now, is, how can I describe it in one word, the media. There were no computers when I was young. There was no internet. So there was none of that immediate access that is so much a part of the lives of our kids now. And in some ways, it makes their lives better at the same time that it has a certain corrupting influence, I'm afraid. We've got so many things to work out in this country, in this world. And, you know, for me, my role in it is the writer of books, presenting these issues to kids without pretending to be able to answer them. But I think books of the sort that I write do play the role of presenting the questions and making them available to kids for discussion. And even in today's school situation, where a lot of their education is taking place virtually, still teachers are using books like mine and others to present these issues and to initiate discussions with kids. I hear from teachers all the time, again, by the internet, by email, and they tell me about the interesting, particularly the book The Giver. It's often used in schools in seventh and eighth grade. I just had an email from a teacher who was kind of pissed off because she's sixth grade. She had always used The Giver, and this year her school has decided to use it in seventh grade, and she doesn't get to teach it. But she talked about what a wonderful vehicle it was for thought and for discussion and debate. And those are things that it's hard to initiate with kids at that age. They want to be in agreement with all their friends, and then they're presented with these issues where they're up for discussion. And teachers love having a vehicle like that. And I'm very honored always to hear that I've been able to provide that.
I will say that was about the age that I was when I read The Giver. I was about sixth or seventh grade. When you look at the moment in history that we are experiencing, which of your books would you say resonates most with this moment?
Which of my books?
Yes.
I suppose I would have to say The Giver, because it deals with a time in the not terribly distant future when the world has changed. And of course, we're at a time when the world is changing. The Giver is one of a quartet of books, and there are three that follow it. One of those four books, the second one called Gathering Blue, is also set in the same future time, but in a different location. In The Giver, the community where the boy lives is very sophisticated in terms of its technology. But in the second book, in a different location, they've lost all their technology. That book is called Gathering Blue. Live in a very primitive fashion. And each year they're required to listen to a recitation of the history of their world. And in that ceremony, it's described an occasion when tall buildings fell and burned. And it's clearly a representation of 9/11. And yet the astonishing thing is that the book was written before that happened, which gives me a weird feeling of being prescient in some way. Then in the third book, same time period, different community, a very pleasant place where everybody gets along, and it's made up largely of immigrants, people who have come there from other places. And in that book, the community divides and factions are formed because one group wants to build a wall to keep out any further immigration. So again, it's oddly related to things that are happening now, though it was written a number of years ago. So any of these books are related to what's happening now. And at the same time, there's another book I've written that is not as well known, and it's called Like the Willow Tree. And that's a book that is part of a series published by Scholastic called the Dear America series. I was asked to write this book, and each of those books, written by different authors, is in the voice of a child who is on the periphery of some historic event in this country. And so I was asked to write about the flu epidemic of 1918. I wrote this book probably, 10 years ago. And they've just decided to republish it with a new cover on it, because of course I did a lot of research to write the book, but so much of what happened is being echoed now at that time, and in the voice of the child talking about her family. Her father's angry because people are closing down their stores. He is still going to work every day, but he thinks it's foolish that people are not going to work, and she's upset because her birthday's coming up, and she'd been told that she could go to the movies for her birthday. And movies, of course, were a big deal in 1918, very new. And so she was excited about that. But now the movie theaters are closed down. And so everybody's life is affected in the same ways that they're affected now. And of course, there's tragedy involved as well. So a number of my books, whatever form they take, are oddly related to these times. But I think of all of them, probably The Giver would be the one that is most related. And it in part has to do, the thing that kids take away from it is the fact that this world of the future has been created by people who, in making, I suppose, political decisions, had made compromises and had compromised on important things with a bad outcome. And so it alerts kids to the importance of decisions and political decisions. And peripherally then, of course, I hope it alerts them to the importance of voting, which is such an issue right now.
The speech that you'll be giving virtually here in Milwaukee is really all about hope and possibility. What does that mean to you? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. But even though we deal with such difficult issues, I have always been a writer who looked for, at the end of a book, a happy ending. The Giver ends ambiguously. And you don't know when you finish reading it whether the boy, the protagonist, is alive or dead. But if you read the further books, you'll find that he's alive. I've always believed in happy endings. And even now, in these difficult times, I do think we'll come through it, because we always do. I hope we'll come through it stronger and better. But part of what I try to write about is resilience, that we need to hang in there, fight for what's right, and come through with a positive ending on the other side.
For you, what are some of the things that you've been focusing on right now, looking at what's possible and moving forward from that point?
Well, I have to think. It's curious because I'm working on a new book right now, and it's set in a distant previous time period. A lot of research involved, but I've been living in that time period instead of this one, and maybe that's a kind of denial and avoidance because it's so difficult to be in this time period. But I think in answer to your question, the thing that I would focus on and that I hope kids are going to be able to is getting through it and maintaining optimism. That's the hard part sometimes, I think. It's so easy to just fall into despair and think this will never end. And yet, of course, it will. The book set in 1918 makes that clear. The book transpires over the course of a year. And of course, that epidemic ended eventually. It ended and left a lot of tragedy behind, as this is, but it did end. And so I think that's the thing to focus on, that there will be an ending, a resolution, a moving forward. And so I think optimism is what I try to focus on and to give to kids.
Well, Lois Lowry, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to, I was looking forward to being in Milwaukee, and now, of course, I'm not going to be, but I feel as though I am, because I'll be with people. I've been doing a lot of these virtual events, and you can convince yourself that you're there in that crowd of little rectangles with faces. And so I'm looking forward to my time with Milwaukee.
Well, we're looking forward to having you.
Thank you.
Lois Lowry is an author best known for her books The Giver and Number the Stars, for which she won the Newbery Medal. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and Lowry will be presenting a virtual lecture for the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee this Saturday, October 3rd.